Survivor Specialist John and McKenna are back to rewind episode 8 of Survivor 50. But today we have a very special guest with us. It is Jordan Kalish, who hosts This Week in Survivor History over on RHAP. And we were like, we got to have him on a rewind this season because, I mean, you kind of have the same shtick as us. We love Survivor's past.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like 90% of the time I'm talking on a podcast, maybe even more than that. I mean, I it's usually about seasons that are not currently airing. I love going back and looking at the history of the show. It's always been my one of my favorite things of analyzing a season is how it relates to things that have happened before. And I've always I've always like prided myself in being a promoter of the of old school Survivor. I am definitely even while I have liked certain things in the new era. And of course I've liked 50, you know, based on the fact that they brought back some great characters from old seasons. I do like more of a pure game as opposed to a lot of the things that they have tried to throw at the wall in the Survivor 40. So it's always fun when I get to talk about old seasons of Survivor, which luckily for me is weekly.
Yes, same for us here. So what is not, you know, old school Survivor is this week's twist. John got to talk about it on a recap already this week, but Jordan,
yeah,
I know you are a Survivor purist. Mm-hmm. Duos being voted out together, please give us your thoughts.
So I think two things can be true at the same time. And I'm first going to talk about the episode from the standpoint of like watching an entertaining episode of TV. It was a very entertaining 90 minutes of television. I got to see a lot of my favorite players on the show do some pretty cool things. I got to see Sari come back from Exile Island and totally sway the vote in an opposite direction. I got to see Rick Devins pull off fake idol shenanigans, which is something that I loved watching him do on The Edge of Extinction. Even Coach with, I think that was this my favorite iteration of Coach on any of his seasons? No, Token Sheen's Coach is always going to be my favorite Coach. But we got to see him doing the Coach Chi. We got to see him doing more haikus, which maybe they went a little heavy on the haikus. But we got to see Coach kind of, going out with a bang here. So I was entertained for 90 minutes. If the goal is to make an entertaining episode of TV, which is, I think, Survivor's goal, that's what they're a TV show, they're entertainment, that's what they're trying to do. I think Survivor succeeded. And I also do think that it led to some interesting strategy. It's things that we haven't seen before on the show because it's so different than anything Survivor has done. So it sounds like I'm talking about this in a positive way. And I think in a vacuum, there are some positives about this. I have a huge issue with this twist. It is not Survivor. This changed the rules of Survivor for one round. And my least favorite thing about a game is when you randomly add something that has no place on the season. This should have been maybe a spinoff, maybe a different show, but not Survivor. I know Big Brother has done this in the past, but guess what? I don't know if Big Brother, I don't care about Big Brother integrity. I don't care about the integrity of like, you know, I think I've heard international seasons have done this great. International Survivor has done a lot of things lately, especially Australian Survivor, that's probably better than the new era of Survivor. And from what I've heard, that there have been international versions that have done this double duo, whatever nonsense. And the double duo, is that what we're calling it?
Jeff called it.
The name makes no sense either.
Nope.
First of all, it was four
people going home.
Six duos. There were six duos and only one went home. So I don't know where you're getting the double duo. But should have been called like Double Trouble or something. So the name aside, I don't really care about the name, but I don't know why Survivor feels the need to change its own rules mid-game. It's why I have an issue with the knowledge is power. It's why I have an issue with the do or die. I don't mind Survivor doing twists. I mean, when you look back in the history of the show, technically the first tribe swap was a twist, but I don't think it changed the rules of the game. It just changed the format of the game for the better, because it's interesting when you have a swap. When you put the idol into the game, I think, you know, you took it, we went 10 seasons without idols and things can get a little bit stagnant. I'm not going to be a total 100% purist here and say, oh, they should never do idols. It should always be two tribes with 16 people, 8 people per tribe. And, you know, we should merge at 10. Like it doesn't always have to be the same, but the rule on Survivor is that you go to tribal council, you vote someone out, they go home, you go back to camp. I don't think that this was a round of Survivor. I think this was a round of Sequester thrown into Survivor, and I'm totally against that.
Yeah.
Having said that, also, you know, I'm happy the people that I'm rooting for stayed safe. So again, there are some positives for me here. I'm happy that Devins is safe. I'm happy Aubrey is safe. I'm happy that Suri and Christian are safe. I was entertained by Coach. I've also always been kind of a Chrissy fan. So I do, but I kind of think it's the way that they went out. I'm not saying they, you know, Coach did a lot of things that resulted in him getting voted out. I think Chrissy got herself onto the wrong side of the numbers. And I think that, you know, Sheree talked about why she's a threat. So I do think that there were some elements of, you know, things that are normal on Survivor, getting someone voted out, getting them both voted out. It was just the way it happened does not sit right with me. And I think the mistake they made in the pre-merge, they had three tribes. They could have done a bunch of double boot rounds, which would have been within the rules of Survivor and what the show has done before.
Finally, I have come across someone who believes what I believe about this twist. I feel a lot of people are like, I'm okay with this, but I feel like it's because of the results that happened.
Yeah.
Like if Suri was to go out on this twist, everyone would be up in arms.
The internet would burn the show down to the ground. Especially Suri. So we have watched enough of Suri of Survivor. We know that there's going to be some bullshit that sends her out of the game at some point.
Yeah. And if it was this?
She's playing. I do think she's playing the best game to this point, but she's always playing the best game to this point, and she always gets voted out eventually by bullshit. So, I mean, okay, I'm not going to say it really not. I mean, the Game Changers thing was really the bullshit that I understand, like, you know, Micronesia, she gets sent home because they do a final two instead of a final three. Again, within the rules of the game. And on Exile Island, she's playing the best game. There's a 2-2 vote. She goes out on fire. I'm fine with that. I wish she would have won both of those seasons, but she didn't. Mm-hmm. But if she goes out because of some crap, I'm going to be pissed. And I'd be really pissed if it was this.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we started talking about Suri, and so we are going to go right into our outwit portion of the podcast. And that is Suri just changing a vote. She walks into 50, walks on the beach, and changes everybody's mind for the vote. And it's like, why aren't we going Coach and Chrissy? And then Ozzy just has that, you know, you're right. Why aren't we going Coach and Chrissy? Suri can just, it has this presence of like, here's how it's done, but not in a commanding like sense. She makes you feel like, oh, you're right. I am coming to this conclusion myself. And this was just a masterclass in Suri Fields, this episode. And I had a blast watching it.
Watching Suri come back and just take control of this game to a point where she can sway a vote completely. You had people, her allies, you had Ozzy and Rizzo sitting there talking about, oh, we think this is what Suri would do. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as Suri comes back and says, no, that's dumb. And I think this is actually a really important part of this episode too, because I don't think if this twist was happening, either Chrissy nor Coach would go home in this episode. I think both of them were pretty safe this vote otherwise. It's the fact that they were paired up that made it so that they were targeted here. As Suri said, right? When do you ever have a chance to take out two in the Solid Alliance? Mm-hmm. So it makes sense as to what Suri's thinking is here, how she pushed this vote. What's more fascinating is you have Chrissy coming out in exit press saying that she didn't even know Suri controlled this vote until she saw it on the episode this week, which may or may not be true. We never know when it comes to exit press, but it's just fascinating to see how dominant Suri is. And we all know it. We've seen it for years now. This is the fifth time we've seen her on American Survivor. We've seen her on Australia versus the World as well. We know what Suri is capable of. There's a reason why she has the moniker of the best to never win.
Yeah.
And you see her come in to this beach and this comparison I'm about to make almost feels like it's desperate. Like it's not an adequate comparison for Suri. And it's wild to say that because I'm about to compare her to Kim Spradlin, one of the most dominant winners in the game's history, because they are playing such a similar game. But it almost feels disingenuous to give Suri this moniker of someone else's game when it is just Suri's game and the way she's always played.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, Suri is, I mean, this is not a controversial statement, is incredible at the game of Survivor. When you look at all the times she's even ever been eliminated from the game. The only time that she's ever received a majority or plurality of the votes of tribal council was the one vote she received when she got voted out of Micronesia. Every other time she goes out, it was either the tie vote, her first time out in Exile Island. She gets idled out in Heroes versus Villains. She gets no votes when she goes out in Game Changers. So she's a player who everyone knows. It's not like it's a surprise anymore. Everyone knows when she goes out there that she's one of the best players of all time. She's someone who doesn't win immunity. She doesn't find idols. So it's never like she's never immune. So the fact that she's still able to go out there, everyone knows how good she is and how good of a threat, but they still fall under her spell, speaks to the fact that she's maybe the best social player in Survivor history. And, you know, she always gets the moniker of best to never win. It's hard to call someone the best ever when they have never won. And I wouldn't call her the best ever. I would probably call the two-time winners the best ever. And maybe the, you know, if you count international, the three two-time winners, I think you got to put Parvati up there as well. But she is, I would say, same tier, just lower on the tier. I don't even put her any tier below them. I think she's up in that Mount Rushmore of Survivor players. In this vote, like, you have Rizzo, who's been watching her on TV since he was a fetus. You have Ozzy, who's played with her before, has been snowed by her before, but they are still both under her spell. And yes, I know that, I think especially Rizzo, I think, is a very self-interested player. And I think that he knows working with Suri benefits him. And I think Rizzo is actually playing a really good game. Ozzy, I think it also benefits him at this point. I think they also realize, look, if you know, you get to the point where you're working with Suri, her allies tend to go really far in the game. And also she's a great ally where she's always going to be a bigger threat than you. And she's most likely not going to win immunities. Like challenges are not really her thing, even though she did find the coconut in this one. Congratulations. Suri. But I do think that players are disarmed by her because of how good she is, and they forget how good she is because of how good she is, which is insane. And I feel like if I were playing Survivor with Suri, I would be under the same spell. I want to be part of like the Fields family at that point, and I might say, oh, you know what, yeah, Suri could win this game, that's fine. But I think that it's incredible that she's able to come back after missing, like, I don't know what the timing was on that, but it probably was hours of strategy time where the vote was going in another direction. And as much as I loved Rick's idol step at Tribal Council, which was extremely entertaining, and I think that did potentially sway some things, I really think it was Suri's maneuvering that swayed this vote. I think that that even if Rick didn't pull out that idol, I think that Coach and Chrissy were going home. And I don't think that would have been the case if she didn't find the coconut.
Rick might have pulled over a few that were straggling along, still voting for Devins and Aubrey, but she definitely swayed the tides with this vote completely.
Against the Tidewalker.
Yeah.
Exactly. No, he renounced the name Tidewalker. He gave it to Jonathan now.
Jonathan's the Tidewalker. I mean, I guess Coach makes the rules. He's the one who gives the name.
Yeah. So people have heard us talk about Suri's 3-2-1 enough. So I want to let you talk about your thoughts on 3-2-1, because obviously that's when she really pulls a bunch of numbers together to maneuver a vote to get herself further in the game, to get Courtney out as someone who is, you know, everybody wants to take to Tribal Council.
Yeah, I think that she gets to that point in Exile Island where you're down to that six-person Kasaya alliance, which had been working together since like that very early swap, which actually happens after only one vote, which is, I believe, the earliest swap they've ever done. I mean, it's the earliest swap you can do in Survivor, right? So they were working together the whole time, and she found a way at the final six. And this is just it's another just testament to her, both her social game and her strategic game, that she was like, you know what, I don't need to, you know, be in a majority sub alliance in this six person alliance. All I need is three. As long as I control where everyone's vote is going and I know where every vote is going, I don't even need a majority. I just need a plurality. I could get three people together. She did, and it worked out. And they got someone out of the game who probably did not want to go to the end with Suri. The only person I think in that game who would have been okay going to Suri was Aris, and that's who ends up you know, voting with her at the Final Four. Unfortunately, she loses fire to Danielle. But I think, and I think I've always said this about Aris, I think Aris is a good Survivor winner. I think the biggest knock on Aris as a player is the fact that he was willing to go with Suri to the final two because he would have gotten destroyed.
Well, that's a knock to Amanda and Parvati too. A lot of people say that about their games in Micronesia. That's and true. I think with the Aussie boot in Micronesia, a lot of people think, or it comes across as more of Parvati's move than it really is when you watch the episode, because she's betraying her hardcore alliance of that four. But throughout the episode, you just see Suri stewing on maybe Ozzy is the right boot here. Mm-hmm. Then she goes to Exile and she's like, it's raining, it's cold, I'm angry. Ozzy's the right person to go here. And then she comes back to the beach, and after the challenge, when he doesn't win, she's like, all right, troops, Ozzy's the boot. Let's get it done.
I think in her mind, and she's probably correct about this. Let's say it's, you know, she decides to go to the end with Ozzy and Parvati and Amanda. Is Amanda and Ozzy ever voting against each other? No, like Ozzy was a vote in Amanda's pocket, not in hers, and she recognized that. And I think a lot of times on Survivor, people make the mistake of recognizing something like that too late, and then you don't have the votes to do it anymore. So she took him out. He had obviously had an idol in his pocket and goes out with it. He's someone who at that point had only played once before, but he had a lot more Survivor experience than Jason Siska, who goes out in a similar fashion the next week. But I also think that, you know, showing her game, how good of a player she is in Micronesia. You know, everyone, when you think of the vote where at the final five where Eric gives up his mm-hmm. necklace, yes, it's Natalie Bolton who goes to Eric and, you know, convinces him to give it up. But who's the first person when they're sitting around the fire that says to Natalie, you know what, I think Eric might give up his necklace if you really lay it on thick? It's Suri. Suri's the one who brings it up first.
Yeah, I think what's really interesting about this Aussie boot in Micronesia is the way the episode frames it. It almost makes it seem like Suri has this epiphany while on Exile Island, that Exile Island is pointless as long as Aussie has the immunity mm-hmm. or the idol. So they might as well get rid of him and the idol. He's already... I think, like, now when people look back at Micronesia, they kind of forget how big of a deal Ozzy was coming onto that mm-hmm. season. You kind of forget that he almost wins Cook Islands. He loses yeah. by one vote. And he is a challenge piece. Yes, he loses the first individual immunity to Jason, which puts him in a weird spot. But the favorites were running that game. The mm-hmm. alliance that the favorites had at that point was so solid. But we did see some dissension with Parvati going over to Natalie and Alexis, and that did put a little bit of concern in the men, which is honestly the distraction Suri needed to pull off this move. Mm-hmm. Suri takes advantage of a situation where the boys are so preoccupied with we're either sticking with our plan or we're a little concerned about Parvati, what do we have to do about it? But Jason's still this bigger threat because he can win immunities. He outlasted Ozzy in this immunity as well at this round. So there's concerns about that. I think there's a bit of ego that plays into it as to why Jason has to be the one to go. And Suri is able to take that moment and explicitly say, these are the people you're not allowed to tell about this. You can't tell Amanda because she's way too close. She'll never go for it. If Ozzy gets any whiff of this, he plays that idol. All these plans are just completely done. She is able to articulate it in a way where everyone wants to follow her instruction and everyone realizes it's getting them further in the game. There is not a single person that Suri pulls aside to pull this move off with that it does not benefit moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. And this is the episode we are going to be watching over on the Patreon. It is season 16, episode 10, I promise. So watch that so you can listen to us. And then we're going to move on to Game Changers with the Haley boot, where it was either Haley or Michaela going home at that boot. And everybody was leaning more on Mikayla because Mikayla didn't benefit their game, but Mikayla benefited Zeke, Sari and Andrea's game, and a little bit of Sarah because they thought Sarah was more with them, their game. So they were like, how do we get a chance to keep Mikayla around? And somehow Sari gets the other side of camp to put Haley's name down as the majority with Mikayla in the minority here. It's not even like she maneuvered the votes in any way. She just convinced them that Haley needed to go here. And I think this episode would have benefited either having a full episode, because this is joined with the Aussie boot, or just 90 minutes in itself to see how the heck this really went down at camp. Because I left that being so confused on how the heck she did all that.
Yeah, and she voted for Mikayla.
Yeah.
Which is really something that you never see. I feel like you might see it in like, I feel like I've seen people do it in like LRGs, but I don't know if it ever happens on the show before where someone's like, okay, I'm voting for you, but it's really not, I know you're not going and I'm just hiding my true allegiance here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you really see like at the merge and beyond, her relationship with Mikayla really blossoms, and Mikayla's basically a vote for her along the way. So I think that she is, again, she just has, we saw it with Stephanie in this episode of 50. Like, she just has such a good read on people. She knows who she could trust, who she can't trust. And I hope this is the season where she's able to get over the hump and, you know, maybe wins fire. You never know. She lost it on, she has experience. You never know. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Again, if I'm playing the game, I know I said before, like, I'd be totally snowed by Sari. And I say, oh, it's okay, Sari wins. I would think that if, like, I got voted out and I was on the jury, if I'm playing the game, I'm like, I can't go to the end with Sari. And I can't let Sari get to a final four where there's no vote anymore. And you have your only hope is that someone loses fire. I hope that Sari's been practiced fire like 500 times between Australia versus the world and going out here. And I hope she gets there. It's so hard to imagine it happening because it's always blown up in our faces when we get so close to it. And I would love to see this be the game against like such good competition too, that Sari wins.
I think like the nice thing with Survivor 50 is because you're kind of going in, and Karishma was talking about this on Digging Deeper with Phil and Blake yesterday, but the idea that you really want someone to represent the season a lot, and I think that really does give some more credence to Sari's game and people being more okay with taking her further into the game than maybe they should. Because it's like, well, if I'm not going to win, at least Sari's winning. Mm-hmm. And when we look back at this Game Changers move, what's really fascinating about it is how, maybe it's just the way the episode's framed, but we see Sari kind of make this very personal connection with Mikayla. And that bond's there. Sari realizes how important Mikayla can be to her. And then, like both of you said, she still puts this vote on Mikayla here. And that vote is not particularly close. There are 4 people who vote for Mikayla, 7 people who vote for Haley. She is able to convince enough people that it's completely safe for her to put this vote on Mikayla. It isn't even like, hey, I'm putting this vote on Mikayla and this could end up sending you home. There was no question Haley was going home in this instance. And again, this is, it's almost this strategic aptitude that Sari possesses that people really take for granted, is the fact that she is so confident in voting, in knowing exactly where everyone in the game is voting. And she knows exactly how to piece things together in a way that she can manipulate a vote without you even realizing she's doing it, because of how adept she is at just figuring out what people are going to do.
And I think that's why I've never, like, I know I've used the terms social game and strategic game on this podcast. And I think everyone, when they talk about Survivor, it sort of comes up when you're talking about how people have won the game, how people have lost the game. I've never really liked to put them in two separate categories. I think the mm-hmm. social and strategic game are exactly the same thing.
I agree.
Because I think that the strategic game, there's Survivor strategy, if you're just thinking about it as the numbers, there's really nothing that complicated about Survivor mm-hmm. strategy. There's only a certain number of votes that could be cast at any tribal council. And obviously this, the double duo vote, I guess, is sort of a little, and that changes that a little bit. But it's really people's social connections, which allow them to make these strategic moves. You could be the best numbers person in the world, but if nobody likes you, you're not going to make the merge. So it doesn't really matter. how like smart you are from a numbers perspective. You have to have like a strategic mind to be able to say, oh, this would be better for me if this happens, or like mm-hmm. I need to, you know, get these people together in order to make a vote happen. So it does help. I'm not saying you only have to be likable, because if you're not strategic at all, I don't think anyone's going to really respect you. And then you'll probably mm-hmm. just get to the end and lose, because no one wants to lose to a player who had like no strategic mind or head for the game. But I really think that, you know, Suri is a very strategic person, but it is the fact that she makes these social connections that allows her to pull all this stuff together, that she does it seemingly on like every game that she plays and almost every single vote, like you said, John, that she knows where the numbers are going. And I want to like compare it with what Coach tried to do in last episode when he's putting his vote split together. The vote split totally makes sense, but it's the approach. It's the social approach that he had with people that had like basically everyone feeling badly about how he was, you know, how he was talking, how he was trying to get like kind of browbeating people, say, oh, we're doing the 7-4, whatever. Coach's approach and Suri's approach couldn't be any different. And that's why Suri is sort of able to like put these things together at will, where it doesn't even seem like she's telling you what to do. She is making you think, like McKenna said before, that it is the best move for you. And I think the best thing that a survivor player could do is present why this is good for you, not why it's good for me. Because if I'm pitching it, you don't need to know why it's good for me. You need to know why it's good for you. And she usually brings up points that are true. It's not even lying. Like she usually brings up good points as to why it is actually good for that person. But of course, she's doing it in a manipulative way where she can tweak those facts a little bit to serve what she wants to happen.
I think Coach and Suri each are, you know, giving the players a sheet of connect the dots, where mm-hmm. Coach has finished the dots and is handing it to them and see, like, it's a duck, see? And then Suri's like, here's a sheet of connect the dots, you do it yourself, and then you come to the conclusion, oh, it's a duck. So I think that's kind of just, like, how her game works, and it's a little bit more smooth. But I think we've given Suri enough flowers, at least for this episode.
Many more opportunities throughout the season.
Yeah.
I think it's so funny that McKenna, sorry to interrupt. The thing with like Ozzy thinking that Suri would want Aubrey out, not only has Aubrey probably seen Survivor Game Changers, he was on Survivor Game Changers. Doesn't he realize that they're definitely working together? I think he forgot that Aubrey was on Game Changers, or at least
Were only there together for like a day or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, Ozzy was right after that that Halle Ford boot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're gonna hop on over to give Tiffany her flowers here. And we're going to talk winning your first immunity on your second try. So Tiffany obviously competed in a few immunity challenges in her season, didn't come out with the W, but this episode she does come out with a win. And it's so awesome to see people get their first immunity win. But John and I found out that it's kind of a prediction for the future of Survivor this season. So, John, tell us this fact.
Yeah, while looking into this, after the episode aired, McKenna and I were doing our research to try to figure out, okay, how many people have, like, won their first immunity on their second season? What's it usually mean to it? We noticed a very interesting trend, and that is people who do this, who have survived more than one tribal council in their first and have competed in more than one individual immunity challenge, have always gone on to the finale of the season that they win immunity on.
Yeah. So like this would be like excluding Rob from Marquesas when he wins in All Stars. He was only there for like one round. So
but he does still make the finale, so he's still there.
Yeah, that's true. But like typically if you are able to play in more than one immunity challenge in your first season, don't win anything, and then your second season, win immunity, you go on to be in at least the finale minimum. Majority of the time, final tribal council. So yeah, we're predicting a Tiffany in final tribal council.
The outlier for making it to final tribal council is actually on this season, because it's Aubrey in Game Changers.
So that's only fifth at that too. So
yeah.
Yeah, and I, you know, this the I have never thought about this before. The first time I've ever thought about this was when I was reading your notes for this episode of the podcast. And I was trying to think of like, why is this the case? I think maybe when you come in to a game with a reputation of being a challenge beast, I think at first, like in the early part of the game, people are like, okay, this person's a good shield. But then you come back and you win immunity again. Like you've won immunities a bunch on your first season. You come back and you win it. Now you win immunity. They're like, oh, it's a reminder of like, oh, you know what? This person could go like beast mode for the rest of the season and win them. When you haven't won before and then you win, it's like you don't really have a reputation of it being a challenge beast. And they're like, oh, it's probably not going to happen again. She just won her first one. It's not a big deal. So maybe it's just something that gets into the players' heads. It also could just be a total coincidence. But I think that there, if I had to guess why people do well, do I think Tiffany's going to go to the finale? I don't think so. Because first of all, if she and Joe didn't win immunity here, I think there's a very good chance based on like a lot of the conversations that were going on. It still could have been Coach and Chrissy. It still could have been probably not Devins and Aubrey if Tiffany and Joe are immune, but I think there's a shot it's them because everyone else who was paired with like an honor integrity person had someone who was not in that alliance kind of protecting them. Tiffany is not really in any alliance. Her alliance was D, and she was also paired with an honor integrity person. So it could have been like, okay, we don't have to necessarily take this double shot at like at those people, but we can get one of them out plus like someone who doesn't really have any connections. It's not going to piss anybody off. But Tiffany did obviously get votes at the D vote. She was talked about until she won immunity on this vote. I think when people start writing your name down, it becomes like almost permission to do it again. So I would be, the finale might end up having six people. Can she get to six plays? Sure. So it's about getting to the finale. It's not necessarily about getting to the final tribal council. So I think she can get there. I think she can be looked at as a free agent right now, and people might want to try to pick her up. I don't think she's going next. Do I think, if I had to predict, does she get to the finale? What do you think the finale is going to be, five or six people?
I hope it's five. Six
it's
is going
to be five episodes from now?
Yeah.
Is that how many episodes we have left in the season?
I'm going to guess she doesn't. But if she does, it's probably because other people now are perceiving her threat level as not being that high based on the fact that she is that she doesn't have D anymore. She's looked at as really not having any alliances, but it does help her that she made this connection with Joe, because Joe is someone who is going to be looking for new allies now because half of his allies just got voted out.
Yeah, I agree. And I think one of the big things that was really interesting in this episode, one of the conversations that was kept happening in this episode, was this idea of like these middle players. And I think when you look at Tiffany's the other side. But Tiffany, it seems weird to call one person the other side, but it seems like Tiffany is considered the other side in opposition to this honor and integrity group. So it was fascinating seeing her do that, make this connection with Joe. And I think she's shown it's weird to say this because Tiffany is a bit of an outlier when we look at some of these examples we're going to look at for winning their first immunity and second season, because a lot of them do it later on in the season, right? They get to a point where it's like, hey, there's six people left. You've won your immunity. Now you go on and win the season. But Tiffany's doing it very early. Is that going to pay dividends later? Maybe getting through this single immunity is what Tiffany needs to get to the finale. Who knows? We don't know exactly how this game's going to break at this point. So this, Phil always says, you have to survive the vote, right? You have to get through the vote. And if you get through the vote, the entire game can change. Mm-hmm. Tiffany got through a vote that was probably very pivotal for her to get to. And there were conversations in this episode about how the game really opens up with Coach and Chrissy gone here. So it'll be fascinating to see if she finds herself in a much better position. But I think she's already in that just because I don't think she's going to be targeted now.
Yeah, and I also think that it might not be looked at as necessarily, Tiffany's going to go on this challenge run, because mm-hmm. she won with Joe, and who is sort of on the opposite end where he won four immunities his first time out. So they're like, yeah, Tiffany won immunity, but she was paired with Joe. Of course she won immunity. Joe is, tied as having the most immunity wins, I guess now, right? He would be considered in first place right now in the 41 through now, I guess. Are we still in the new era? I don't know. Feels like we're in the new era.
Great question.
It feels like we're still, I was saying the whole time, okay, we're in 50, we're out of the new era, we're post new era, but the fact that we're doing like Blood Moon and Double whatever, we're probably still in the new era, even though we have a lot of old era people on the show. But anyway, in the 40, I guess Savannah's gone, so she couldn't win any individual immunities. So I guess Joe does have the most individual immunities of the 41 to 50 era at this point. So I don't think people are necessarily going to say, oh, Tiffany, you know, is now a challenge beast because she won one. I think she is. I mean, if you look at how she performed in the pre-merge, I think she is really good at challenges. She's clearly very, very athletic. So I don't really know if that's like the perception that she has right now. And I don't think it changes just based on winning that one. So I think it's interesting to talk about the middle too. And I think someone brought up this on Twitter. I don't remember who it was or if it was like a former player or so. I don't remember. Someone I follow talked about the fact that the middle, the terms of the middle, mm-hmm. for like Devins and Christian and Aubrey and Emily Flippin, it's really great marketing by the Ceree, Ozzy, Rizzo contingent, because really they're the middle. Devins, Aubrey, Christian, and Emily, yes, you said Tiffany's the other side. They're also the other side. Like, they're a mm-hmm. clear alliance that everyone knows about. It's Ozzy who has connections with both sides. It's Ceree who has connections with everybody. And Rizzo, who also has connections with both sides, and one of them now in coach is gone. But they're really the middle. And I think calling these people who are not the middle is great for them. They could sort of work in the shadows, be the middle without being looked at as the middle. And I think the middle is going to start to be a dangerous connotation to have. And I would not be shocked, especially now that Devins has what people think might be an idol. Christian is always going to be looked at as a big target in the game. Emily Flippin is looked at, I think, as someone who's scary to play with, sort of like in an Abby Maria territory of being mm-hmm. like both not on your side and also somewhat unreliable to work with. And then Aubrey, who, you know, I think that her target has gone down since Genevieve left the game, because that was the main person going after her. I think she maybe has the least target out of all four of those people, but I really am very worried about both Devins and Christian, especially in this next episode. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if it's a vote split on the two of them.
Could be.
Which I don't want to put that out there, because like, after, so like it's really, for me, it's like the three-headed dragon of people I'm rooting for. It's Ceree, Christian, and Devins. I would love to see one of those people win Survivor. Mm-hmm. And not that I would like, I love Aubrey too. Like, Aubrey's up there mm-hmm. for me as well. But those are really the people I've been rooting for the whole season. So I hate putting that out there, but it makes sense. And I mm-hmm. would not be shocked at all if that's what happens. That's what I, like, again, if I'm anyone else in the game and I see how you have these people that are so close, and they're also very good strategic players, and one of them might have an idol, it makes total sense to do a vote split on Christian and Devins. But as Christian showed from his time on David versus Goliath, sometimes a vote split can lead to one of the people in the majority going home. So you never know.
Everyone knows that familiar feeling when you just can't answer that one simple question: what's for dinner? Well, thanks to Omaha Steaks, I find myself in that situation way less frequently. Dinner is handled in minutes when I keep my freezer stocked with restaurant-quality protein from Omaha Steaks. And it's not just tender steaks. We're talking flavorful burgers, chicken, seafood, sides, and even desserts, all delivered directly to my door. So whether it's a rushed weeknight evening or a Saturday night cookout, you can have quality protein on hand when you need it. And let me fill you in on a little secret I've been using the past few years. Omaha Steaks proteins aren't just great to have in your own fridge. They also make fantastic gifts. When my dad's birthday comes around, I'll gift him one of the many options of steak packs, and it's an instant win-win. One year I got him the complete cookout collection, which is perfect because he enjoys grilling up everyone a great meal, and I make sure I'm there to celebrate with him, so I get a fantastic steak dinner myself. Win-win. Feel free to use that one. And I want to clarify something for any skeptics out there. Yes, frozen delivery can be this good. Omaha Steaks is known for their meticulous aging process and vacuum-sealed individual packaging. shipped nationwide and arrives frozen, ready for grilling, searing, and roasting with minimal effort and time. No last-minute runs to the store. They can't match the quality Omaha spent generations perfecting. And if you've never tried them, the Burger Perfection Flight is the perfect introduction. For just $79.99, you get 20 premium steak burgers crafted from 5 distinct cuts of meat. We got filet mignon burgers, New York strip burgers, ribeye burgers, brisket burgers, and sirloin burgers, each with their own different flavor and style. So try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99, plus get $35 off with promo code BEEF. This isn't some rinky-dinky discount. That's $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, B-E-E-F, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details.
In Backtrack by Mark Cameron, the past is prologue for a violent criminal with three names, Ricky Lee Pink. Pink has been rotting in jail for years, plotting revenge against the man who thwarted his almost perfect theft of $5 million in diamonds. That man, Wayne Cutter, is deceased, but his grandson, Arliss, is very much alive, for now. Pink and Cutter are about to collide in a violent confrontation on a floating city in the middle of the water, a massive cruise ship traveling around Alaska's Inside Passage. An experienced U.S. Marshal, Arliss must move fast but cautiously, or he may be the last of the Cutter family tree. As Survivor fans, it's not just the strategy and social dynamics that keep us enthralled. It's also the idea of man versus wild. This concept is at the heart of all Mark Cameron's novels, and it's especially prevalent in Backtrack. It's one of the main reasons I enjoyed this book, and as listeners of The Specialists, I know you will too. If you're an outdoor enthusiast, fan of wilderness thrillers by authors C.J. Box and William Kent Kruger, or just love a fast-paced action thriller from the likes of Brad Thor or Jack Carr, make sure to pick up your copy of Backtrack today. An Alaskan resident and Texas native with nearly 30 years in law enforcement, Cameron is a master of action and gritty detail. He brings explosive authenticity to Backtrack as U.S. Marshal Arliss Cutter's manhunt will employ all his skills and knowledge as a member of the U.S. Marshal's service. Backtrack by Mark Cameron is available now wherever books are sold.
Another pivotal person in their season winning their first immunity challenge on their second time out was Cochran, because then he was perceived as like, oh, he won one, not a big deal. But then he started to pick up in pace and immunity wins. And that could be something that happens with Tiffany, you know, oh, she won with Joe, it's going to be fine. But then that could be something that propels her a few votes in because of, you know, her relationships that she's now gathering with Joe, with Ozzy. She has Aubrey. So there's a way that she can use, you know, maybe this and future immunity wins to propel herself forward like Cochran did in Fans versus Favorites 2.
You think there's maybe a confidence that comes from winning one also? You win one and then you absolutely can say, oh, I could win another one.
Yeah.
100%. I totally agree with that. But the thing is with Cochran's first win, it's very interesting because you look at Cochran's immunity wins in Karamoan. His first one is the eating contest, right? So it's gross food. It's one of those ones that's like, okay, this is a one-off. There's nothing he'll do. The next one he wins is the one he gets the challenge advantage for when he has to hold up the log after the auction. And then the third one is its final four, right? That he wins?
Yeah.
Puzzle there at the end. So
the fire puzzle.
The fire puzzle at the end. These are all challenges where it's like, okay, yeah, I mean, Cochran in a puzzle makes sense that he would win that. Cochran has an advantage. Like, I think his early wins were in this type of category, kind of like Tiffany's, where it's like, okay, but Tiffany wins with Joe. Is that much to worry about? Cochran wins a one-off challenge that we'll never see a repeat of. Cochran wins one with an advantage. I think I think it's just more beneficial for Tiffany to win this challenge with Joe as her first immunity because it is so unseeming. It's so
unassuming.
That's the word I was looking for. Thank you, McKenna. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's so unassuming. And it's just like, because again, Tiffany does seem like someone who could easily rattle off a bunch of challenges. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if she does end up winning a few here. But
you got a bunch of nerds left. Like Tiffany can be.
Yeah. Right? It's like her competition's what, Stephanie?
Yeah, she's good at puzzles. Yeah. She's good at puzzles too, because they had that conversation. Joe and Tiffany, Joe was like, "I'm good with physical." Tiffany's like, "I'm good with puzzles," and they made a great duo together to be able to do the puzzle and the physical, because you have Christian, who's a great puzzler, and Jonathan is great at physical, but Tiffany also backs up her puzzle with a little bit more physical than Christian has. So I think she is going to be that threat down the line that Cochran didn't really emit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Another one is that I wanted to talk about is Amber, because she won in the late game when it really mattered to secure herself safety through the last little bit of the vote. And Tiffany, like we were saying earlier, used this immunity to secure herself safety through maybe through some more votes and to get herself to where, you know, Amber is and where Tiffany could potentially win again.
Yeah, I had almost forgotten that we're talking Amber in Survivor All Stars, I guess.
Yeah, because
she didn't win Survivor the Australian Outback. I had almost that until I saw your notes that Amber had won a challenge. What round was it that she won?
It was the final four. It was actually a very pivotal challenge in All Stars because it's what gave her and Rob the leverage in voting against Jenna and Rupert in the final four to make sure that they essentially guarantee they win the game.
Right. It's too bad that there wasn't a final five vote where they could have voted one of them out, but because that was really a masterclass by Rob and Amber there, that they got that Tom and Rupert fighting. I'll always remember that fight of them just standing in the water yelling at each other when they should have been absolutely gunning for either Rob or Amber there. But yeah, I mean, I think there might be something to this. I never really thought of this trend before.
We'll have to see. This is one that I'm very eagerly awaiting to see how it plays out in the end of this season so we can see if it continues or not.
What's your over-under on how many more immunities Tiffany wins this season? You have to put a number, like a prediction on how many you think she's going to win the rest of the West. The rest
over
of the
one. Over. I'll give the over 1.5.
Over 1.5. My prediction is under. I think she'll win one more.
I think under as well. I think she's going to win one more. I also just think she can't win next week's immunity challenge that we see in the preview because we know what it is. Because it's the one where they're winding the thing. And that very much favors people with large forearms. And we have two of those on the season.
So. Oh, it's the
prank one.
Yeah, and Joe almost won that challenge.
So you got Joe and
Joe and Jonathan are there, and I would be shocked if either of them don't win that challenge.
Unless they do another duo immunity where it's man and woman, but
another double duo twist.
Yeah. I'm actually really glad you bring this up.
We're just voting for two people. See, now that's why I think, like, if this were a different game, if we're in Survivor and we were in a reality show where every week there's like pairs decided and you had to vote pairs, like, I think that's an interesting game. It's just a different
game. Challenge.
That's the challenge.
That's how the challenge works.
Sometimes challenge games is just format every season, but like primarily you're usually in that type of format.
Two of my very good friends are challenge podcasters. I have no idea of how the show works. Never seen it, and I've been described various things before. I know a lot of Survivors have been on it, but I've never actually watched the show.
Yeah. We were talking about it a little bit earlier. So our Outlast this week is multiple factions is what we're going to call it, because, or it could be sides within a season. And there's not really like a middle, like they're calling the middle the majority of the people around camp. And I'm just so confused by that. So we broke it down a little bit to Honor Integrity being Coach, Chrissy, Stephanie, Jonathan, Joe. Then we have Ceri and the Wizard of Oz. Then we have Christian, Emily, Devins, and Aubrey. And then Tiffany's kind of like the floater here. That is like, she's kind of, I'd say, the middle rather than the other side, because she can float to whatever alliance because she doesn't have those connections aside from Aubrey. So we have these like big chunked out groups of like, there are alliances, there are sides. It's just, it hasn't come to the nitty gritty where people have to choose them.
Yeah. And now with Chrissy and Coach gone, the biggest contingent is the Christian, Emily, Devins, Aubrey contingent. The thing is, are people looking at Aubrey necessarily as part of the Christian, Emily, Devins group? Obviously, Christian, Emily, Devins is a known group that everyone's talking about. They should talk about Aubrey. They should know that Aubrey is probably part of that too, mainly because of her connection with Rick Devins. But she also has a connection with Ceri, which almost makes me think that Ceri and Aubrey going into the next round have a lot of insulation because they both probably have someone on the other big side protecting. Mm-hmm. I think that after Coach and Chrissy, like, I would be very surprised if it's Jonathan, Joe, or Stephanie going out, because I feel like they're going to want to hit someone else. And that's why I'm so worried about Christian and Devins, especially with this idol that's not even an idol. And even if it were a real idol, I would be worried about a vote split on them. And who's saying no? The only two people in the game that might not want to do it are Aubrey and Emily. And I could see Emily saying, you know what? I do probably need to lose a number here to like lower my own threat level. And she's been willing before to throw anyone, especially Christian, under the bus as she did at the spot. And Aubrey really going to want to go down on a ship that everyone now wants to like split votes on, where she has connections with other people in the game, like Ceri. So I'm very worried about those two guys, and I don't want to see it, but that's, and then Tiffany, it should be happy to do whatever results in her not going on.
She needs to be
standard mode for the rest of the game.
Which it did seem like she was getting into last episode. That's what I actually really appreciated. I had an aha moment while watching the episode. I was like, oh, Tiffany's doing anyone but me. And this is exactly how she has to play this game at this point. This is great gameplay. But it's interesting, Jordan, because you mentioned this idea of like Aubrey and Ceri, are they working together? And we had that confessional from Aubrey this episode where Aubrey says, yeah, Ceri comes back and she's, everyone just listens to Ceri. They do what she says. And I just hope that I can use that it's working for me. Right. And I think that is kind of leading us. And now I'm not 100% sure how cut together that clip was. If you look at the editing, it seems a little disjointed. And I'm not sure if Aubrey is then saying, Ceri's a huge threat, we need to vote her out.
Well, I've only seen it once, and it was at a bar at a viewing party. So I haven't like listened like that specifically.
Deeply.
I don't know if it's been spliced together.
Well, because of McKenna being on the East Coast, I have to watch the episode twice every week. So it makes it really easy for me to watch things on the second go. It's just like when they cut it away to Ceri, it's like, okay, how is it? It looks like we're hiding a cut here in the confessional and making this work. But the point of the matter is that Aubrey does phrase it as, I really hope Ceri's working for me, which makes me a little concerned for Aubrey. But at the same time, it's like, I think this means Aubrey and Ceri are probably going to work together for an episode or two.
I think so too. And I don't even think they don't always need to vote together. I think it's actually good at times they're on different sides, but I do think they provide protection for each other. Just like I think Steph and Ceri, and that's why Ceri is so well connected. I think Steph and Ceri provide similar insulation for each other. With Steph, it's not like the Honor Integrity Alliance is totally dead. You still have three people left. They're just as big as the Ceri-Ozzy Rizzo group. So I think the fact that you have like three large factions plus Tiffany, who maybe she joins I think she'll go wherever she needs to go. But right now, if I look at this, who is Tiffany's biggest ally in the game? After last week, the only evidence that we have is Joe, which is two people I would never really put together. And the duos, like their fates were aligned, and maybe they will be aligned for a couple more weeks. I think that Ceri and Steph are fairly safe because of their bond. I think that Ceri and Aubrey, right, I think Ceri is double safe. And now I'm getting nervous about Ceri because Ceri seems like everything's going well. Yeah. Things get pulled out from her. But I think that those three are safe for a long time. I think Jonathan and Joe eventually, like, I don't think they're going next. Like, I'd be shocked I'd be surprised if anyone else from that like Coach Alliance group goes again next episode. But I think Jonathan and Joe, I think that their games have an expiration date because people are going to start worrying about the fact that the later they get in, they're so good at challenges. Jonathan, I think, won two on a season, but he's also Jonathan. He's a giant. at 1-4. So I think people are going to be worried about, you know, if we don't get him at a certain point, there might be a point in the game where you're not able to get him again. Or unless they don't care, because if they're not worried about, if they think that they could beat them at the end, maybe they're not even worried about that. Sometimes someone's a big challenge and nobody cares because everyone wants to go to the end with them. And I don't know if that's the case with Jonathan and Joe, but it could be. So it really leaves like Sari is so well insulated. She's not going anywhere. And I think she has enough sway to protect Ozzie and Rizzo. That's why I'm so worried. Like, it could be a vote where everyone could just agree to vote Tiffany. I mean, if people are worried about idols and stuff, maybe they're like, okay, Tiffany goes here. But I'm so worried about the side that I really like, the people I'm rooting for, the Christian and Devin side. And then, of course, plus three. But I'm not really worried about Suri.
Yeah, I think with Coach and Chrissy going, this breaks up a lot of maneuverability, because I think, honestly, Steph's next closest two allies are probably Suri and Ozzie. So she could probably then add herself to that alliance. Mm-hmm. And then, like you were saying earlier, Jordan, Emily has that relationship with Ozzie. She could be like, sinking ship, I'm going to jump, and then go in.
You'd be right to do it.
And then Aubrey slides in. So you could see Jonathan, Joe, Christian, Devins as then the other side. And we do split into actual, you know, in power, not in power sides.
I don't see Jonathan and Joe working with Christian and Devins. I think
that no, they would just be on the bottom, and then
maybe it's two duos that are now jockeying for the people who are actually in the middle. And that's why this middle thing, this middle moniker is so brilliant for the Wizard of Oz crew, or Suri's Wizard of Oz crew, because the middle sounds dangerous. It sounds like you're kind of manipulating everybody. It's like the Will Wall pendulum strategy. Mm-hmm. You're the pendulum, but the pendulum is really the Suri's Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. And I think it's what's really fascinating about this is, as McKenna and I were kind of going through seasons trying to find examples of these type moments where we really had like three distinct factions, it doesn't happen a lot in Survivor. Mm-hmm. A lot of the times, McKenna and I would just like be going through each season behind the scenes, and how McKenna and I plan episodes sometimes. We go through the seasons, we're just like thinking of examples, and it's like, oh yeah, this is a binary season, this is a binary season. It's like, there's us versus them the entire time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so there are only a couple of examples. Cambodia is a little different because it's voting blocks, but it's still kind of an us versus them season when you really break it down. So
Cambodia did not invent voting blocks. That has always been a thing.
Sorry, what was that?
I said Cambodia did not invent voting blocks. No. Despite what the people on the show like to talk about at Tribal Council, there were alliances, and there were alliances within alliances. There's always been voting blocks. since Marquesas, really. And really, like, if you look at, Survivor, you look at Australian Outback, like, if you look at the Ogacore Alliance, there was a voting block within the Ogacore Alliance that goes to the final three, and they're fine letting Jerry and Amber go at the final like 6 and 8, I think it was. So it's always been a thing. That the voting blocks thing has always been a thing. But I do agree with you that it is not as common to have like pretty even sized, three even sized groups, or even more than that, going forward in the game, with a lot of like interweaving between them, especially because this is a returning player season.
And then we hit token chains, and we were like, Coach did it again. So we have Coach, Debbie, and Tyson all in a group. Then obviously JT, Steven, and Taj in a group. Brendan and Sierra kind of off by themselves. I know there's that exile alliance, but it never happened. It never amounted to anything. And then you have Aaron floating around somewhere, voting wherever it seems fit for her to vote. And I'm like, this really also does have, you know, three separate sections of people with their own agendas with that floater around.
Yeah. And I'll say this is also another instance in Survivor where I think Coach screwed up in his approach with other players, because I do think it makes a lot of sense. Like, JT, Steven, and Taj should have been looked at as way more dangerous than they were, because they were a tight three that were from like this decimated tribe of people. But like Coach, Debbie, and Tyson, and I would say like Coach was sort of the main factor here, once they voted out Brendan, which I think was sort of good for everybody, which is why it came together. And yeah, that's, you know, that's the Dragon Slayer around in Survivor history. That's clearly Coach's move. But there really, it was the fact that he alienated Aaron and Sierra. That's why they weren't able to take control of the game. I mean, if he really made Aaron and Sierra feel like they were part of that Tim Vera alliance, JT, Steven, and Taj would not have been able to get to like three out of the final four spots in the game. Instead, it creates these factions now where Aaron is not part of this Timbira group, where Sierra just lost Brendan and that was her biggest ally. So that is part of the reason why Steven, Taj, and JT were able to go so far in the game. So I think that is an interesting moment where it made sense for Aaron and Sierra to go against their original tribe.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think what it really comes down to is this idea that we've talked about tribes being decimated and underestimated a lot. In fact, the other example we're going to bring up later is also going to be one of those instances, kind of. But when you look at this season, these were three players who were playing the game on such a higher level than everyone else that season, too, in Steven, Taj, and JT. Mm-hmm. And they had all of the elements you needed to do it. They had the strategic elements, they had the social elements, and the physical elements eventually as well. And because of the strength of that three, the bond they had made, they had been working on this alliance the entire game, they were just able to take advantage of the fact that Timbira had these feuds they wanted to get rid of. And that's exactly what we're seeing in 50, right? Ceri's Wizard of Oz is just taking advantage of the fact that Jonathan had beef with D, so they everyone targeted D, they alienated Tiffany, and got into a spot where it was very easy pickings to take off Coach and Chrissy this episode.
Yeah.
To quote Tywin Lannister, what is stronger, five or one? He goes, five or one. One, the tight core is going to always be, or not always, but often, and I guess one of the examples where this didn't happen was like the alliance, the Kasaya Six in Exile Island, who all kind of hated each other. So there are examples where this doesn't always happen. But in most cases, the people who like each other, who maybe like kind of gone through the ringer on their original tribe and have this bond, will beat the people like the Coach Debbie Tyson contingent, which sort of left the other Timbira people out of the loop. So I think that there is definitely truth to that. And I think we're seeing it potentially play out on this season where Ozzy Rizzo and Ceri don't have any beef within their group and some of the other ones do.
And then we go into 49. Now, yes, it just happened, but 49 starts with three tribes, but they're in a tribe swap for a good amount of time to make some new relationships. You have Christina, Steven, Sophie, MC solidly on one side. Then you have Nate, Rizzo, Sophie, Savannah on another side. And Sage and Jawan have relationships with both of those people. So they're kind of a duo off to the side themselves. And then you have Alex, who's like, I'm going to play the middle the entire time. And so instead of what everybody else has done in both 50 and Token Chains, they got rid of Alex after Nate, but they got rid of Alex to eliminate that floater that Tiffany could wind up being crucial moving forward as a vote.
Yep. And I think in that season too, we see, you know, we have Steven here in the Christina, Sophie, MC, that was the yellow tribe, but he sort of is also ends up being part of the Jawan and Sage group, the bottoms up alliance. Mm-hmm. And I think he definitely felt more comfortable with them going forward. So we do see cracks. We see cracks in that alliance. We didn't see cracks in the Rizzo, Sophie, and Savannah. So that's the group. They lose Nate, but they didn't turn on Nate. So they didn't really have any bad blood between them. Sophie, Rizzo, and Savannah end up being three out of the final four in that game, just like Taj, JT, and Steven were. So I think, again, we're seeing an example of it's not just the numbers, it's how close the bonds are. Like, if you ever done a Brant steal, you might have an alliance of five people, but their alliance strength is like a four, or there's an alliance of three people and their alliance strength is a 10. They're always going to stick together, and the alliance, the alliance strength of four or five is not usually going to stick together.
Yeah, what I think is so fascinating about this is this is almost one of those examples where because Rizzo, Savannah, and Sophie were actually the opposition in this case, they weren't in this middle position like we see with the Jalapau 3 and Ceri's Wizard of Oz in 50. They were still able to utilize those cracks to get things moving. And yeah, okay, there are some like twists that really benefit them. Obviously, like the split tribal council is a massive advantage for Rizzo and Savannah. Rizzo just leveraging his idol through that entire situation was also very pivotal to the three of them being able to get so far in the game. But more importantly is like they were able to maneuver exactly and precisely. And I think this is really what it comes down to. This is what it comes down to with why Ceri is so good at Survivor. This is why we're seeing this group of three play so well in 50. Survivor is so much about timing, and people don't seem to understand that that's the majority of the strategy of this game. It's not making sure you have, like, yes, there's an aspect of Survivor where you need to have the majority of the votes in order to progress through a vote, but it's also the timing of when to shift your alliances to get pivotal people out of the game. And I think that's what we really saw a lot of with this group from 49. And I would be shocked if that's not what we see a lot of with this group in 50 moving forward.
And I think, you know, Cochran brings that up in the final tribal council when he wins in Karamoan. I think someone who didn't necessarily bring this up, but someone who I think his success at Survivor is so attributed to timing is Tony Vachos. Because yeah. Tony, you know, in his first season, blindsides LJ after they had played an idol on each other. He didn't allow that GD group to get too strong. He was able to keep control of his alliance. And yes, he left some people out, but he was able to bring them back in. I think whenever he made a move against someone from his alliance, it was exactly at the right time. And he does it again in Winners at War. His biggest move in that season is probably the final nine vote. He gets rid of Sophie, which was a really, really fun, like, what was that, a 4-3-2? Yeah, 4-3-2 vote at the final nine, which is crazy that he's able to put that together. So it isn't about just like, okay, we have the numbers and like we're going to, you know, now march through. He was able at the exact right time in both of his winning seasons to get rid of people from his own alliance who probably were going to beat him or at least would have put him in a worse spot in the game. So I think he's a great example of that too.
Yeah. All right. As we are wrapping up, Jordan, I have a few last questions for you. And they are, who do you want to win and why? And then who do you think is going to win and why?
Okay, well, I've been saying this, that I've been singing Ceri's graces for this whole season. But I do have a couple people that I'd be extremely happy if they won. Ceri gets the nod over the rest of them because of the fact that she's played so many times so well, and it just hasn't happened, and I would love to see it happen. I think if you polled the Survivor audience, at least the Survivor Superfan audience, I think like 80% of people are going to say Ceri here. So that's a boring answer, but it's true. Like, I want her to win. I would be ecstatic to see Rick Devins or Christian win or Aubrey, who I know is like not, I wouldn't say it's controversial anymore, but there was the whole, and it was always like, I never really liked this back in the day, but there was the whole like Michelle truthers versus Aubrey people. I was definitely an Aubrey person. I wasn't someone who was saying, oh, Michelle, the sucks and doesn't deserve to win. Like she got to the end, the jury liked her. That's the game, she deserved to win. But I was always a bigger Aubrey fan. So I would love to see Aubrey complete it and win the game of Survivor. I've been a fan of her as both a character and a player. I think that her game in Koh Rang is one of the best non-winning games in Survivor history. So I would be really happy with those four. Let me see. Okay, so we have, I don't want Steph to win. I don't really want Jonathan or Joe to win. I think they're boring. Tiffany is someone who I didn't really get the casting. Nothing against her. I think she was fine on her original season. I just thought there were more interesting people. I think she's been fine on 50. I mean, I think that this was sort of a breakout episode for her. I don't really want Tiffany to win over some of these other people, but it's just more because I'm fans of these other people. Honestly, it would be fascinating. I'm not necessarily rooting for it, but again, he's just been a staple of Survivor for such a long time. And on his first season, he was one vote away. So that would be interesting. Rizzo's too new. I want Rizzo. Rizzo's a very good player. He's playing a great game. If he wins, if he's able to keep doing this to the end and wins, I could see him turning me and me rooting for him, depending on who he's sitting next to. If he's sitting next to Ceri, I'm not rooting for him. No, I think Rizzo is a very good player. I think that it's just been, we've been saturated with Rizzo content for the last year of Survivor. And it's sometimes, like, I feel like sometimes in his confessionals, he comes off as like, almost like a Big Brother player where he's like doing like bits in the confessionals. Mm-hmm. That like wears on me a little bit. But again, it's in the confessionals. I think he's doing a really good job of making everyone feel good about him. I think he's playing a fantastic game. And then Emily Flippin would be wild. I've always liked Emily Flippin. I think it would be very funny if she won. I don't really see the path, but I would love to see it just from like a chaotic perspective. I mean, I don't know what the – I could see rooting for her if she goes against people like, you know, if she goes to the end with like a Stefan Jonathan. I know who I think anyone goes to the end with Stefan Jonathan, I know who I'm rooting for. But now who do I think is going to win? This is interesting. I think I don't think it's going to be Ceree, because I think what have we done as a society deserve a Ceree survivor win? I don't think we've done enough. I think it could be, I'm just looking at the people in the individual groups who are well insulated because of their connections with the other groups. So those people, I think, are anyone from the Aussie Ceree Rizzo contingent could win game-wise. I think that I would say Rizzo has the best chance of winning out of those three. I think Ceree wins if she gets to the end with them, but I think Rizzo has the best chance of getting to the end because people aren't going to say, oh, we can't go to the end with Rizzo. But then also, if people are saying that, are people going to want to lose to Rizzo? I don't know. He might be too new. And that newcomer to the table on a returning player season isn't necessarily fair to him, but that could hurt him. I think that Steph has connections with Ceree. That's going to help her. I think that she released a controversial video on Twitter that I wasn't a fan of, but that was after she was on the show. So I don't know if people are going to say, oh, we can't vote for Stephanie because we're going to get canceled. So I think Steph is in a really good spot. She could also, she's not being looked at as like a chat, like a huge challenge. Like you can't like let her get too far in the game. Like maybe you do with Jonathan. So I think spot wise, she's in a good spot. And I almost think losing Coach and Chrissy is potentially good for her because I think it lowers her threat level. And then Aubrey, the person who was coming after her the most, is out of the game. Mm-hmm. Aubrey is also insulated by her relationship with Ceree. So I think that those are the people who have people on the other side. Now, I am very worried about, as I've said multiple times, about Christian and Devin in this episode. Once one of them goes, the other one is now in a bad spot, but also their threat level is limited because they're not in this tight group anymore. One of them is out. So can a Christian or Devins win the game if one of them gets voted out next episode? I think they could, but I think the degree of difficulty would be very tough. So at this point, you know, fuck it, Ceree. Ceree's winning Survivor.
There we go.
It all comes back to Ceree. And
I'm going to take the meta out of it. Look, Ceree, I think, is playing the best game and she's in the best spot. So on a normal season, if someone's doing that, that's who I think is going to win. And I think Ceree's going to win. Okay?
Yes.
Yes.
I agree. Ceree is taking the dub here. So thank you so much for joining us, yes, Jordan. It was a blast to collab with your Survivor history, our Survivor history, and make an episode out of it. Just as a reminder to everybody, we will be watching Micronesia Season 16, Episode 10, I Promise, over on the Patreon. We got Ceree going over to Exile Island. We've got her manipulating the Aussie blindside. So we've got a lot of tie-ins to this episode of 50. John, what's going on in the Specialist universe?
Well, we had double duos this week, which also meant we had a double duo of recaps this week. Phil and Tegwith broke down the episode, and then Will and I also broke down the episode on Wednesday. Phil and Blake were joined by Karishma yesterday for Digging Deeper, which was a fantastic episode. If you haven't listened to it yet, please give it a listen to. Phil's being joined by Will Wall this weekend for the Power Rankings.
Oh, yeah, that's why I brought him up. I knew it. I knew it was happening.
And then Tegwith has Christina Riccio. Christina Mills for, I read things wrong. I'm bad at reading, it turns out. Christina Mills will be joining Tegwith for Matt Chat this week. McKenna, do you know who Phil has for
Smokes, I believe. Tommy Smokes.
Tommy Smokes is coming back. Yeah. So Tommy Smokes from Barstool will be here for the predictions this week, which will be very exciting because, man, you guys have to be doing better than me at those predictions. I am getting 2 every week, and it's like you have to get better than 2. It's not hard.
I got 3.
Let's go. Kind of beating me, and I'm really upset about it. Jordan, where can people find you?
You could find me on all the social media at Jordan Kalish. I'm at Jordan Kalish on the things that I'm on, so like Instagram and Twitter and Blue Sky, all those things. I would say I'm probably the most active on Twitter, but I should be, I try to do more on some of the other ones too. If you want to go to a really fun Survivor viewing party in New York City, I hosted a bar called St. Pat's every week. It's a free Survivor viewing party. We always have a ridiculous amount of people. If you want to get a seat, come early. But we have like two floors of a bar, and we've started like kind of getting onto the first floor also. So we've almost taken over this whole bar at this point on Wednesday nights. So you can do that. And yeah, that's basically where I am. Listen to on Rob Has a Podcast. If you have never listened before, I'm sure you probably know of Rob Has a Podcast. And if you haven't listened before, it's a great Survivor podcast. There's Survivors covered by from every angle every week. And my segment is called This Week in Survivor History. It is on the Exit Interview podcast. And we do Survivor trivia with Rob Cesternino and a guest. And you mentioned Charisma. Charisma, one of the best people in the Survivor community. I've had the luck of becoming friends with Charisma. We hung out for the first time in person ever. In Atlanta, but we've been friends for years. So it was cool following her on this podcast because we had a lot of fun in Atlanta. She's great. So follow Charisma too.
And you know, you forgot to mention, Jordan, they could hang out with us for a weekend in August.
Oh yes,
you apply to Survivor New York, play some Survivor, and have Jordan and I watch you intently.
Yes, and maybe I'll be your tribe handler, and you'll get to be swap screwed.
Exactly. So thank you again, Jordan, for joining us. And we will see you next week on Thursday instead of Friday. And we'll see you then. Goodbye, everyone.
Thanks for having me. Oh, we're still on.